Hi, welcome to the Worksite Wellness follow-up Q&A session for the webinar. I'm joined by Deborah Sienna of Proactive Partners and Bob Keller from the McLean County Health Department. And today's forum will just be a follow-up to the previously recorded webinar that you viewed. You'll have an opportunity to ask any questions of Deborah or Bob related to their presentation. I ask that you mute your phones while others are speaking because we are recording this session. Please do ask any questions that you have. Don't be shy or worry that you're talking over someone else because we have a small number of people on the line and we'll be able to facilitate that through. I do want to remind you that this session, as well as all of our webinars, are recorded and archived on the iPlan website. So if you have colleagues or community health partners that you'd like to pass this session on to, you can refer them to the iPlan website and the instructions for downloading the AT&T player and the web conference are online. We just ask that anyone you pass it on to, you also ask them to give us some feedback on the feedback survey, and we also ask that you complete the feedback survey so we can continue to improve the services that we provide. So with that, I welcome all of you here today and thank you for participating and viewing the session, and would like to start us off with one question for Deborah, and then I'll open it up to anyone else who has a question. Deborah, a lot of information, and Bob, this is for you as well. A lot of information was presented, and for some folks who don't have a program started or are working with a local business that doesn't have a program started, how do you start? Where do you even begin?
Yeah, that's a terrific question, Lori, because sometimes it can seem overwhelming, particularly when you hear about Bob's program that's been in development for years and has grown to be so successful. But as he'll share with you in just a minute, you got to start somewhere. And it's the old saying, how do you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. So my thoughts first is whether it's within your own organization or whether you're working with a local business is first to try to reach out within that organization, whether you can get right to the top with a president or a director or a CEO or with the HR director to see who within the organization is interested in executing an initiative and is interested in, and has some enthusiasm about implementing a worksite wellness program, and then what already is going on within the business or within the organization. Is there already a director? What's happening within human resources, within employee assistance? What's offered through the insurance program or through the benefits plan? Are there champions who are interested in working with you or collaborating with you in helping to execute some of these ideas? Another great way to get started within an organization, your own or another business, is to actually do a survey. And it's taking some of the ideas from the presentation today and some of the ideas that you heard and reaching out to the employees within the organization to say, are you interested in a walking program? Are you interested in bringing Weight Watchers on site? Are you interested in starting a healthy eating club or a biking club? And seeing where the interest lies within the organization, because obviously giving people what they want is the best way to get them engaged. And then the last piece that I would say in getting started to make sure that you do right from the forefront is make sure that they're aware of all of the free resources that are available to get these programs going. So if you find a champion or someone who's passionate about it, if they're willing to survey the employees to find out what it is or where they'd like to start within the programs, if you find out what's already going on, and then you use some of the free resources to actually support, you can, within a very short period of time, have a lot of activity and a lot of good stuff going on without a lot of time or financial commitment because you're not having to reinvent the wheel.
I would agree with Deborah. This is Bob Keller, and actually starting out, I think, with a marketing effort, and I think that's a lot what Deborah's talking about, is taking a look at the lay of the land, who's interested in the program. But the other thing I would stress, and how we developed our program, and it was very evolutionary, as you could see, and start with something small. Small victories, something that's fun that the employees will be willing to take part of and have a good time doing it. And then I think you can grow a wellness program incrementally as it goes on. So I don't think you'd want to go in and try to do all of it at one time, because it might be an overly daunting task. So find out who's interested in it. Start small so that it's not overly intrusive and time-consuming, and then build from there.
Great. Thank you.
That element.
Who else has a question on the line?
This is Doug from Ford Airport. Bob, I was wondering, this is a question directed at you. As far as the shock loss claims, is that, number one question, is that annual claims over 55 or just per person claim?
Those are claims per person annually. So anything over $50,000 per person on an annual basis is what we looked at.
Okay. And then secondly, with that, say you do have an individual with cancer or something, and it's driving that claim, and that person turns around and retires, how do you get your results so that it incorporates that aspect? In other words, it looks like the health and wellness program is actually working, but in case you might have someone point out that, well, some of your sicker or older employees might have either quit or retired.
I think what you tend to do in a situation like that, and we were well aware of that variable being in place, is you can go ahead and take a look at that, take a look at what your drop is, and then take a look at who has retired or who has gotten off the program. Now, in our case, we do, for the most part, cover retirees, so we'll take it all the way up to Medicare age. But as people leave the program, we pull those out and we take a look at their individual condition. And one of the things with the numbers that we're looking at, the number of shock loss claims is relatively small. In other words, even with an employment base of over 700 employees, it's easy to track those. And so being able to extract one in a year and then run the numbers again is fairly easy.
Okay.
Also, I've found that even within many of the worksite wellness statistics and the healthcare savings, healthcare cost savings that I was sharing with you from the studies over the years, is that the number of cases in which there are very high costs, even though there's an average of a 3-year turnover within a lot of these statistics, is although you might have a particular person who has a debilitating disease leaving, you might have one coming on board as well. And so usually the norms of those balance each other out, and they still find the healthcare costs above and beyond that continue to improve.
I agree with Deborah. I think one of the things you have to look at statistically, and I think I mentioned this in my presentation, is you really have to be a long-term economist. If policymakers are looking for year-to-year returns on this, it's virtually impossible, particularly with groups the size that we would be dealing with. So you really have to look at, you know, 4, 5, 6, and 7-year trends to begin to really establish anything meaningful. And really, if you start a program, that means you almost have to wait to year 6 or 7 before you can really begin to measure the impact, and not to expect it from year to year. And we've always cautioned the county board in this particular case not necessarily to look at it a year-to-year basis, but to take a look at the long-term trends. And we've been at it long enough where we're beginning to see those returns.
Bob's right on, is that there's usually no ROI information within the first 3 years of a program, but there's certainly just a sense of healthier employees having more fun, being more present, of being less absent, of having a better team attitude. So there's those intangible benefits that you get right from the very first program, and then the ability to really measure the ROI doesn't start at least until year 3.
Deborah, Bob, this is Doug again. I was wondering what to do, because the program, in essence, the programs are easy to replicate. A lot of hard work, but very easy to replicate within white-collar workers. For blue-collar workers, obviously I'm aware of all the management buy-in and things like that. What are some of the things that, like a manufacturing-type person, would do while they're at work as far as these worksite wellness things or healthy eating or physical activity, or is it just something that those types of individuals end up having to do more or less on their own time?
Actually, there's a lot of these that are transferable to manufactured workers or those that are in the field. The whole concept of the stretch break instead of the smoking break, the whole concept of better ergonomics to decrease injuries when you're working on the line, you know, strengthening your core, strengthening your back so that you're lifting properly, so that you have the proper ergonomics. Both decreases any accidents potentials as well as improves the employee's health and attitude towards it. What I've found in working with more of the blue-collar workers that's more successful is when you get champions who are actually on the line who are wanting to quit smoking or wanting to lose some weight or wanting to lower their blood pressure and really can act as inspiration or as team leaders for their peers.
I would concur with some of the comments that Deb is bringing forward. Even in our county employment base, we have a number of blue collar positions, highway department. We have correctional officers, and so it's not just white collar or management that we have in our employment complement. And I think when we begin looking at that, a number of the wellness activities that we have. The number of the activities are relatively low-tech. So, for example, you can end up having a stair-climbing competition. We had a walk to the moon, and you can have teams, and you can encourage people to take the stairs instead of the elevators. You can have Weight Watchers come on board during the lunch breaks, and you can, again, build in employee screening programs and health risk appraisals into those programs, so into those environments. So we have that going in the highway department. We have a high number of certified nursing assistants in the nursing home, correctional officers, and sometimes there are some other barriers, cultural barriers in many cases, to getting buy-in from those employees. But after a period of time, they're as competitive and they participate at the same rate as other employees do.
Yeah, and I'm right with you on the whole concept of instead of it being top-down, again, this idea of surveying or seeing where the interest is and seeing if you can almost get the grassroots effort going so that they're doing it with their peers and there's a sense of camaraderie, maybe a little sense of competition, certainly a sense of teamwork to make a program successful.
Deborah, you also mentioned getting the family involved. Can
right.
you speak a little bit more to that and application of that, how you've seen that work?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of ways that can work, and some of it is through using technology, if it's a web-based program or the ability to share information, and also through education or information, be it a newsletter or a flyer, in which the family actually can earn points or get recognition for changing some of their grocery shopping habits, changing some of their eating habits, eating out less or eating fast food less and cooking healthier meals. I worked with one company that did a family campaign where it was no TV Tuesdays, and instead after dinner everyone looked to do some type of physical activity together, go for a walk or go roller skating or go to a park or anything that they could do as a family, which helped in many ways. Not only just in increasing healthier lifestyle, but this idea of rewarding, or at least if not being able to reward, recognizing the employee when they engage their family in their healthy lifestyle, as opposed to it just being work-centric. And part of that is giving suggestions about activities that employees can do at home, recreational activities, providing educational resources, whether, again, it's web-based, telephonic, or paper-based, sponsoring different contests or promotions for the family to be able to participate in. You know, taking Bob's idea of walking to the moon, you know, is the whole family walking to the moon or walking to the solar system. And a lot of that is self-reported, and it's on a trust basis. But again, if the reward is nominal and if it's just recognition and you're encouraging participation, it's, again, trying to get the employee to bring the concept home so it just doesn't stop when they leave the office.
Thank you. Bob, anything to add?
I would agree. Again, the competitive aspect, one thing you can end up doing if you have teams in the workplace and you're competing about how many steps someone's taking as far as the stairs are concerned, and maybe you can throw bonus points in there for employees to involve their families so that the team gets those points and they get the prizes and the recognition. So there's a lot of different approaches that you can use to get the family involved. One of the things that we've done to get families involved is that for our employees, too, we have had periods of time where we have actually allowed the spouses to come in for screening and to participate as well, and particularly if those spouses are on the insurance plan, because, of course, there's a benefit to the county in this particular case to have wellness extend beyond the employee and into the family.
Yeah, that's terrific. Some of the programs that we've encouraged with families as well as even during commercial breaks is there, you know, can you play balloon volleyball? Can the whole family do sit-ups during commercial breaks? Can you set up an obstacle course in the backyard? All of the Wii Fit stuff that's going on, and again, this idea of letting the family earn points. We've also done kind of a team lean challenge, but it's been a family lean challenge, where, you know, the whole family weighs in, and together you're 412 pounds, and your goal is to get down to 380 pounds as a family. It's not saying who's who and who needs to do what, or together your blood pressure is a cumulative of 600 over 400, and the goal is to get that down by a certain percentage. Again, it's letting you guys work as a team, or is it letting them work as a team or as a group, and earning the points for their family's accomplishment, not just their own.
Great, thank you. Other questions?
This is Kim. I have one question. We have started kind of an exercise program with one of the company's manufacturers in a small town, and we were thinking about taking it more citywide. Have any suggestions?
Well, I think that's terrific, and is the is it a program where you go on site to them and actually teach a class?
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. And so, is there the ability to do that class in a church basement or a recreation center or somebody's empty conference room that they're willing to donate for that, and opening that up to the community if it's possible to do it complimentary, or if not, on a very small pay per class fee for people to be able to come and to participate, or maybe if you need to charge a small entry fee if you're using any type of equipment. Are you using equipment, or are you doing it all?
No, we're doing it all kind of independent.
Yeah, terrific. Okay, great. So your cost is nominal, and it's the cost of the instructor probably. And so, again, if you
can... That's me, free.
All right, go Kim. Yeah, I think it's dynamite. I think you find a hospital or a church or a recreation center that's willing to donate or contribute the space, and you get the word out through the community that you're offering this boot camp or this fitness class, and it's available. And if it caters to a certain age or a certain fitness level, or if all, you know, any size, make or model are welcome, and you know, have it a set time twice a week and build a following, a kind of word of mouth for it. I love the idea.
I think that one of the locations that seems to be available, there are a lot of churches now that have a gymnasium or have a large multi-purpose room that might be appropriate. And another just reminder, I think, that we always have to think of regarding reducing our liability is making sure that the one thing that you do have people do is sign a waiver.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask also about that related to some of the suggestions and, you know, reducing liability, what you, Deborah and Bob, have done if there are programs that you've sponsored.
Personalized.
Well, I can tell you from our end here at the health department, if there's any activities, we've done yoga, we've had dance classes, we've had a number of other things through lunch and learn activities, and as you indicated, that what we do is indicate quite clearly that these activities are voluntarily on the part of employees, that is not a part of their work environment, and that they sign a waiver to that extent so that we don't hit with workers' compensation claims as a result of a strain or an injury that occurred while exercising. But the back to also to the question I about community involvement, and I think that was a very, very interesting one if you wanted to expand it out. One of the things that we have been exploring here, and of course it's too big to manage because, again, ours is an employment-based wellness program, but the other is, and maybe in smaller communities this might work better, and that is trying to get the commitment of mayors and town councils to support that, and perhaps proclamations and support through a small parks and recreation department to make it more community-wide. And in fact, there have been examples of communities themselves that have attempted to lose aggregate weight, so many tons, so many pounds, or walk to the moon. And so that might be one idea if you want to export what you might be doing for an employer and involve the entire community, perhaps getting the political infrastructure to support it. And it might be a win-win situation for them because politically it's always good to be sort of on the side of health and wellness, and perhaps the elected leaders would be willing to lead the charge in a situation like that. And we're doing something jointly here with the City of Bloomington workforce on a couple of projects because some of them are co-located in one of the buildings of the county house. And so far that's worked very well through their Parks and Recs department.
I hadn't thought about the City Fathers. I had thought about the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that suggestion.
That's a terrific suggestion. And then whatever location it is that you're able to secure, again, if it's a church auditorium, getting the church to help promote it and be part of a healthier lifestyle, or if it's a recreation department, or if it's within a school, it is for them to be able to promote it for you as well. I also agree with Bob that you want to make sure that it's voluntary and that you do want to have a waiver that's signed so that it's right from the beginning, it's in writing, and they understand that they're taking responsibility for themselves. And then I just wanted to, Kim, address this issue of whether it should be free or a pay-per-class.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, it's shown that if people pay for a class, they seem to be more committed, even if it's a nominal amount.
Okay.
Sometimes when you offer something for free, even though you're able to, but then people don't necessarily see the value in it as much as even if it's $2 or $3 a class, and a way of a kind of a fun way of beating around that bush or getting that commitment if you're able to do it and not need to charge is to have somebody make the commitment by paying in advance for 6 classes, and then when they complete the 6 classes, they get the credit back.
Oh, okay.
And I've done that within some organizations that wanted to be non-for-profit and didn't necessarily want to commit, didn't want to collect, but mm-hmm. wanted that commitment from people because the concern is that people would sign up that might then not allow other people to participate because you may think it's full, and then people don't show up because they don't have the type of commitment that you'd like them to have to the class, where if you said, you know, it's twice a week for 6 weeks, and collect in that $36 or that $48, and if you complete the session, you get your $48 back.
Okay. Oh, good suggestion. Okay.
Thank you. Other questions?
Deb, this is Doug again. How do you present this to employers as far as profitability? Do you charge, your company charge, say McDonald's corporate office, a certain percent per employee, or do you make your profit off the actual results, cost savings from the employer?
Yeah, that's a great question, Doug. And there are various companies that charge in different ways. My company in particular, we charge a management fee per service fee because for many of our organizations, we're actually managing their on-site fitness and wellness center and possibly their clinic as well. And so we're staffing and providing services on an ongoing basis. But we also do a management fee incentive where we'll take a small piece of the savings, but that way we've got sort of skin in the game, so to speak, so that when they win, we're just getting a piece of that, but they're seeing the savings from the healthcare piece of it. The challenge with that is getting the programs going, because as we had said earlier, it takes a while to get some of the quantitative return on investment information that you would need to be able to sustain a company like mine.
Okay, thank you.
We have time for one or two more questions.
Oh, now they all got shy.
Yeah, I don't think we've heard from Arlington Heights yet. Any questions up there?
Christine, anything?
This is Christine. I was just curious, Bob, what age rate you're using?
Age rate?
Age rate.
I guess I'm unclear as to what you
I
mean by age.
I think said health risk assessment.
Oh, the health risk assessment. I see what
Correct.
You're saying. Okay. The health risk assessment is a computerized health risk assessment, and what it does, actual Health Media is the company that we use currently, and what happens is the individuals, first of all, go through a screening process where the biometrics are collected, and that data is entered into the health risk appraisal. And then there are a series of questions that are asked about lifestyle. And then afterwards, there is a risk profile that's put together, and then a series of recommended modules that an employee can go through. So, for example, if it's related to stress management or related to weight loss, those all come through, and then that drives a series of computerized programs that the employee actually then engages in, and there's a record, and then there's a follow-up that goes into as far as the computerized risk appraisal. If the data show that the employee is well out of bounds as far as what acceptable ranges are, then as far as that goes, then there's either an internet counseling that goes on, or it's telephonic counseling for the. Maybe 30 to 40 hard-to-reach individuals that are involved in the program. So it's structured based upon the input for the biometrics and then also the individual's input, and then that determines the health risk appraisal. And then that aggregate number we throw out, one of the figures that we look at in aggregate that we measure, happens to do the average life expectancy score. And as you saw in our case, it just in 1 year, we saw a two-year improvement, and over the span of time we've been involved, we've seen that life expectancy curve grow. And again, some of that is based upon a mixture of employees in the department, but other of it quite apparently is linked to the risk appraisal and the positive changes in some of the lifestyle scores.
Great, thanks.
And Fulton County, any question before we close? No. Anybody, any final questions?
No.
Okay. Well, I thank you all for participating today, and thank you, Deborah and Bob, for your time and coming back to talk with us. And if any of you do have questions, feel free to email me, and I'll get an answer for you. We appreciate you participating and viewing the session. And if you haven't already completed the online survey with feedback, please do so. We're really interested in what you have to say, and thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
It was helpful.